Midweek Wednesday style, back together again with all of you, January 10th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. I kicked it off with a few thoughts about some magic words I noticed regarding absentee ballots from Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas. Retired U.S. Army Colonel Joe Buccino joined us to talk about the current controversy surrounding Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, while Hearst, Connecticut media editor and columnist Dan Haar stopped by for his regular weekly update.
So, you know, I try to be optimistic. You know that despite my dour outlook on people and on things that I know aren't going to change, I try. I hold out hope. I say, listen, I was a long-suffering New York Rangers fan until we won the Stanley Cup in 1994. I had been tormented and terrorized as a young boy growing up and hearing my friends who were fans of the Boston Bruins and who were fans of the New York Islanders, you know, chant to me, 1940, 1940, meaning that that was the last time the Rangers won the Stanley Cup prior to 1994. So a lot of Ranger fans and I held out hope for years and years and years. So I started, you know, following hockey right around 1970. I was 9 or 10 years old. So it took 24 years of abuse. But I held out because I knew in the goodness of how the sports gods work that eventually things would happen the way they should. And they did. Now, we haven't won one since 94. Nah, 30 years. I'm getting a little testy here. But that's another story for another day. So I am generally optimistic when it comes to things in sports, when it comes to things people I know, even when it comes to politics. But I have to tell you, prepping for the show today, I was reading a bunch of stuff. Oh, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about today. I was off yesterday, back today, life. But even as I read today, I say, well, it may take a few more years than even I, Mr. Optimistic, Mr. I sound jaded and cynical, but I'm really not, because I believe in the innate goodness of people and institutions. But even I am saying, I told you so. And you know, it's good when I tell myself that I told you so to myself. And you other folks, what am I rambling about? Well, 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 there was a story I came over today. And the interesting part of the story was actually the last couple of paragraphs. And this is called, and I don't want to besmirch Mark Pazniokas at the Connecticut Mirror. He's not really burying the lead here. Because the story's headline is, and this is a main issue here. The story's headline is pertaining to elections and early voting. Now, remember, we have early voting starting in this state coming up this cycle. Early voting begins in Connecticut this year, but it hasn't been fully funded. We'll get to that in a moment. See, this is how we do things in Connecticut. We decide we're going to do them, and then, especially if they come with elections, if they come, you know, to a point where they're going to affect elections and ballots. And I'm not sitting here saying everything is corrupt and everything is phony. I'm not saying that. But perception is reality. Words mean things. Actions speak louder than words. Have I used every possible allusion I could there? What am I talking about here? Now, we'll get to the whole early voting thing and the fact that there's barely enough money to do that. We'll get to that. And I don't care what side of the aisle you are on this. Democrat, far left-leaning Democrat, far right-leaning Republican, or somewhere in the great vast middle of this. But this is the kind of thing, or these are the kinds of things that should make you go, oh, geez, can we just get this right? What is so hard about this? And this is what I was talking with Chris Caruso about day before yesterday, on Monday, about let's watch what the legislature does. Now, you have to understand something as we go into this on this Wednesday, January 10th. You have to understand that, and I'm not saying that pedantically. I know you understand it, but I just want to make sure you keep reminding yourself of this. Our Secretary of the State, one of her jobs is to manage as best she can elections. This time around, it's Stephanie Thomas. Previous to that, it was Denise Merrill, on and on and on. You have to understand that no matter what a Secretary of the State in Connecticut, again, I must remind you, it's Secretary of the State, not Secretary of State. But having said that, our current Secretary of the State can only do what the General Assembly allows her to do, or, more properly, what the legislative leaders, a.k.a. five or six Democrats in Hartford, elect her to do. Or allow her, I should say. She's elected, which I think is a mistake, not for her, but I don't think any of the constitutional officers in this state should be elected. But that's another discussion for another day. But look, Stephanie Thomas or any other Secretary of the State here in Connecticut is kind of hamstrung because he slash she of either party can have great ideas, but it's what the majority Democrats in Hartford deem as great, what they deem is not so great, what they deem that will allow them to maintain power, and what they deem that, you know, might eventually hurt them in power. So I see this story. Early voting begins in Connecticut this year, but it hasn't been fully funded. Okay, and I'm kind of reading it going, that's interesting. Maybe I'll mention this. Maybe I'll mention that. Then I scroll down using my middle finger. I don't know if you scroll with your index finger. I like to scroll with my middle finger. That's just me. So I scroll down to the end of Mark Pazniokas' story here. And I see these paragraphs. Listen to this. Now, again, this is at the bottom of the story. I'm not accusing Mark of anything, but sometimes, you know, and I've written stories before. I used to write for print publications. You got to make sure you don't bury the lead. Now, I don't think he buried the lead here, but I see this and I go, huh? Steph, now, you folks in Bridgeport, I want you to listen to this very, very carefully. Thomas said she currently is weighing what legislative changes she will seek in 2024 other than second-year funding for early voting. So, again, they haven't funded the early voting yet. They funded it part ways, but we're going to need more money from the General Assembly and from the state funds to make sure that this early voting, when it starts on March, whatever, is okay for the primaries. All right. So get this. She hedged on whether she will seek new laws in response to the absentee voting scandal in Bridgeport, where security video appeared to capture individuals casting numerous ballots in violation of state law. Connecticut already has strict rules for those who can handle absentee ballots. All right. So I'm reading this. I'm going, yeah. So you ever read something, you're like, all right, what are you delaying on me here? So I read one other paragraph down. One possibility that's been floated is requiring every municipality to have video surveillance of its drop boxes. Okay. I know that's been kind of floated, right? Hey, you know, the cameras are not, I mean, you want a professional installation. You don't want some schmo from Public Works, with all due respect to the schmoes in Public Works. You don't want them just, you know, putting up some sort of Ring doorbell camera. No, there are companies that do this professionally, security companies and all that. So Stephanie Thomas says this. Now, I'm going to read this. I'm going to read this quote here and see if you can pick out. See if you can pick out, kids. We'll start with an assignment here at 2:22 on a midweek Wednesday. See if you can pick out, without any prompting, the key word in this. Stephanie Thomas said, quote, "It's tricky. I'm trying to balance, obviously, between security and not disenfranchising voters, but also minimizing unfunded mandates, especially in the year where right now we have early voting to roll out, which is currently an unfunded mandate. Disenfranchising voters. How many times have I told you this? How many times do you have to hear it from me and, frankly, the other talk show hosts in the state about the fact that I shouldn't say there's no chance, but do you really think, and I will be pleasantly surprised, and I will be the first one to tell you, hey, I was wrong on this. I ain't wrong yet. Quote. Now understand, this is our Secretary of the State, the Honorable Stephanie Thomas. Again, I guess being asked by Mark Pazniokas or somebody, hey, what are you going to do about Bridgeport? It's all we've been talking about for the last year. So what are you going to do about Bridgeport? Quote, I'll give you the quote again. It's tricky. I'm trying to balance, obviously, between security and not disenfranchising voters. But also minimizing unfunded mandates, especially in the year where right now we have early voting to roll out, which is currently an unfunded mandate. Oh, my God. That paragraph is a fortune cookie. Let's crack it open, shall we? You know what that paragraph was? You just had that nice container of chicken and broccoli. Oh, it was good. Then you had what I like to have, a little small wonton soup on the side. And, of course, the succulent grease-dripping egg roll. So what that paragraph was just there from the Honorable Stephanie Thomas, the Secretary of the State, was the fortune cookie, the dessert, where you put one thumb on one side and one thumb on the other, and you crack open that delicious fortune cookie. Basically, a folded-up ice cream cone. And unless the little slip of paper in there says that a bombshell female will fall for you guys, or it has the lottery numbers, it's useless. However, this paragraph that you just heard me talk about and read verbatim from our Secretary of the State. And I'm not saying she's a bad person. I've never spoken to her. I've never met her. That's got nothing to do with it. I read and digest what people say. And there are two or three points in there we're going to go over after we take the break here, news, traffic, and weather together, all that to get you home and get you all dried out on this midweek Wednesday. But I got to tell you, I read that and I say, oh, here's point one, here's point two, and here's point three. Because apparently, and you tell me if I'm misreading this, 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. I mean, you tell me if I'm, Paul, you're going over the deep end now. And that's fine. We'll talk about it. I'll tell you how deep I'm going over. But seriously, we're going to take that fortune cookie paragraph at the end of this story by Mark Pazniokas in the Connecticut Mirror, and we shall dissect it. When you're first learning about science and you're in school, you dissect something. And then when you hear the highbrow scientist on the BBC, I have to dissect this. All right, open phones back to them momentarily later on in the hour when we do that. 203-333-9422. They'll want to take some time and talk here about just an odd story, no matter what your political leaning may be. In fact, there's a lot of bipartisan eyebrow raising, if I can say that, about this. And it concerns the current defense secretary of the U.S., Lloyd Austin, who was hospitalized a couple of weeks ago for prostate issues, which, of course, affects hundreds of thousands of men all around this country and probably a few million around the world every year. But there was some communications issues that have made the front pages and led newscasts all over the country, to which people kind of go, huh? What? Like, he didn't tell anybody? What is the protocol for that? Is that a bad message? Could this all have been an honest screw-up? Or is there a different, you know, level you're held to when you are, say, a senior military commander or a defense secretary or you're a member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff? Joining us right now is a gentleman who served his nation for 27 years, tours of duty in the Middle East and Ukraine. He's an authority on military issues, and he also is the founder of a full-service strategic communications consulting firm, which we'll talk about momentarily. Retired U.S. Army Colonel Joe Bacino is the guest. Colonel, it's Paul here at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great. Thanks for having me. And, as you identified, a very puzzling situation.
Yeah. All right. So unpack this for us, Colonel. So you have the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, who he himself had a long military career. He's a cabinet official. But a couple of weeks ago, Colonel, I'm sitting there, you know, online, reading the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, and I'm seeing these stories about, well, he was hospitalized. Like, all right, the gentleman's 70 years old. We get it. Long life. But the initial report said the White House and or even some top Pentagon officials didn't know for a few days. Talk about that.
It's very strange. So this is also a real disaster class in public relations, the way that they're handling this and the way they've handled it, continuing to handle it, because every time we hear more, it just gets weirder. Mm. And so Lloyd Austin, as we note, as best as we can tell now, he went in before the new year for the surgery, for the prostate mm-hmm. cancer surgery.
Yeah.
And they're still calling it elective surgery. Okay, they know that that's not elective surgery. My father, a long time ago, more than 25 years ago, died of mm-hmm. prostate cancer. So, you know, I'm glad that Secretary Austin is now doing well. But he went back into the hospital. He was out of commission. The Deputy Secretary of Defense was authorized to run the Pentagon, but she was never told where he was. She was on vacation at the time. The Chief of Staff seems to never have told anybody. A small group of people knew. The White House never knew. The National Security Council never knew.
Oh.
Now, meanwhile, while this happened, the United States struck Baghdad.
Yeah.
And that's a country, Iraq, where we have hundreds of thousands, 3,000 American soldiers. And the Iraqi prime minister called for the removal of all those soldiers. So that's a pretty significant event. While we had that, of course, we're also supporting Israel with munitions in its war with Gaza. It continues to devastate Gaza. While that's happening, merchant ships are under attack in the Red Sea. And there's a consideration and discussion of striking the Houthi forces, this militia group, inside Yemen.
Mm-hmm.
So who's running the ship? And then how could this all have happened without the White House knowing? It makes me wonder, is Lloyd Austin even germane to these issues, to these decisions? He's, you know, and I don't want to come on here to be overly critical.
No,
of him.
I get it. I mean, you know, Colonel, yeah, I mean, look, I was talking about this with my morning show host this morning on the air. We do a little crosstalk, and yes, any American, whether it's a regular blue-collar Joe or whatever, or the Secretary of Defense, yeah, there are HIPAA laws. We all know that. You know, nobody makes you discuss or disclose, you know, your medical status. You and I know that's private information. But, you know, Colonel, the guy is the Secretary of Defense. Like,
right.
Wouldn't your first call, if you were conscious and okay, wouldn't your first call, Colonel, if you were Secretary of Defense, be to the White House on some secure line and say, hey, I'm going to be laid up for a few days?
Well, it's even deeper than that. So I worked for Secretary of Defense Pat Shanahan, mm-hmm. who replaced Mattis for 7 months. I was his personal aide.
Wow.
And whenever he went anywhere outside of between either his Pentagon or his apartment, you know, he lived apart from his family there in Crystal City, we had a protocol of notifying the White House, notifying all the senior officials in the Department of Defense. When he went to Walter Reed for, you know, routine examination, they all had to know. So wherever the Secretary of Defense goes, there's a miniature Pentagon that goes with him.
Mm.
There's aides like me. There's comms people who have to can get him on the phone with the Iraqi prime minister within 10 minutes. There's folks who travel with a laptop that has top secret information for whoever comes in. And so, you know, all of these people knew. Who did they not tell? You know, there's a protocol for informing. And then I'm wondering, how often does this man speak with his deputy secretary of defense if she didn't know where he was and never called to ask what was going on, I guess. And then, you know, there's a real concern. I have a real concern about the credibility of the Pentagon here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're still lying about all this. And you know, the Pentagon has a two-star general, an Air Force guy named Pat Ryder, who's the spokesman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's a good guy. He has a lot of great qualities. But he's still lying about this. And he's saying that this was an elective surgery, which we know that's not the case. And now he's being exposed for all this. And the problem is that, you know, the Department of Defense needs that. They have the Pentagon press that works right there in the first floor corridor of the Pentagon.
Yeah.
And, you know, good secretaries of defense, I guess even bad ones, know that you have to maintain that relation because you're going to need those reporters in times of crisis. Well, Austin has never maintained those relations. He doesn't like the reporters. They've grown to not like him. He's a very private guy. And, you know, now they've all turned on him, and now they're going to continue to turn on him if something really goes south in the Middle East. And so this really is a problem.
Yeah. So Colonel, could there have been, and the only thing that I thought of in watching this stuff for years, Colonel, I mean, could the thought in a warped way have been, hey, let's keep this quiet simply because of what you said of what's going on in the Middle East, of what's going on with Hezbollah and Hamas and the Houthis and everything? Could there have been some sort of weird decision? Well, let's not let them think we're vulnerable here. Or is that just completely wrong?
I think that I appreciate you giving Lloyd Austin the benefit of that. I think that's completely wrong. I think that, you know, my experience and people's experience with Austin is that he's a very private guy.
Mm-hmm.
So when they travel, they're required to travel with a contingent of Pentagon press, you know, on the same plane, on the
sure.
plane with him. And
yeah.
he won't even talk to them. Like one reporter, a big-time reporter, passed him going to the bathroom, and he wouldn't even acknowledge him. So he's a very private guy. He didn't want this. He didn't want people to know about this.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that he does not get an expectation of privacy. Sorry. He walks the earth with the most important information any American can have. He does violence in other nations on our behalf. And so we get to know where he is, and we get to know his health status. And so, you know, one more to push back a little bit further.
Sure.
Is like, if that were the case, he would have told President Biden, and he didn't even do that. So, you know, all of this is very alarming. Now, what's almost more alarming to me is that it doesn't seem like the White House cares. You know, he's not going to come out of the job, which he should. He should not survive this because his reputation and credibility are not going to survive this. And the White House is unconcerned. They're on to, you know, the next thing, business as usual. And it's all really, I think, very alarming. Think about it this way.
Yeah.
If they had issued a press release that he's going into Walter Reed for a procedure, okay, we get that,
yeah.
And then Pat Ryder comes out behind the podium. He's been placed in inpatient care. We're monitoring. Deputy Secretary's got the helm.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a story, right? But it's not a crisis like it is now. It's not a flashpoint. And, you know, it really doesn't instill confidence that they have a lot of street smarts. It doesn't instill confidence that they have the ear of the beltway, and it doesn't instill a lot of confidence – that they're always telling the truth.
Colonel, the Pentagon says what it says. You know, you're right. The White House says, hey, we have full. The president is not going to ask for his resignation. We have full confidence in him. That's what they're saying publicly. Was there maybe some screaming and yelling and fist pounding in the Oval Office and other places there in the White House saying, what in the you-know-what is going on here? I would imagine, or am I wrong?
No, you're right. You're right. I'm hearing that the National Security Council, the folks, the leadership there were furious and just concerned. Now, the issue with Lloyd Austin, and I don't want to, make this overly critical of him, but that part of the reason he's in there, he's not a very good sec def. Part of the reason he's in there is he's a bit of a – he's not going to give President Biden any problems. So, in other words, we're going to get out of Afghanistan, we're going to use this one airfield, and we're going to do it in 3 months. Yes, sir, we're going to do that. That's who Lloyd Austin is. And look, they rendered these decisions – for 5 days, the president didn't know where he was, had no contact with him. So he's not really needed in national security. You know, we struck Baghdad and nobody even knew where this guy was or communicated with him. So he's not, a critical member. He's not a player in this administration.
Interesting. Colonel, before we let you go, your website, joebuccinoconsulting.com. Tell us about that.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I just retired, and I left CENTCOM where we had, responsibility for the Middle East, and didn't want to go into the corporate world. Frankly, didn't want to go back into the Pentagon in a suit and tie. So I do my own consulting. It's Joe Buccino, B as in boy, UCCINO, consulting.com, and I do, I kind of advise companies, I advise folks. Crisis comms, all manner of communication, speech training. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm. Colonel, thank you. We appreciate it. And love to have you back when issues warrant. Retired U.S. Army Colonel Joe Buccino. Check out his website, joebuccinoconsulting.com. Colonel, thank you. Be good. Well, I'm sure we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Please have me back on. Thanks so much.
We will. Thank you. Colonel Joe Buccino, 27 years, retired U.S. Army. Check out his website, Joe Buccino, B-U-C-C-I-N-O, consulting.com. And he has experience at the highest levels, knowing and working for at least one Secretary of Defense. So interesting perspective he has. All right, got a lot more to get to. A little more open phones coming up. An interesting pronouncement from Barack Obama. Also one from Mitt Romney. We'll get to all those coming up, I promise, before we hand things over to News 8 at 6. Joining us right now for his regular midweek check-in of all things hot in the state of Connecticut, news-wise, that is, Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut media editor and columnist. Mr. Haar, good afternoon. Did I see a picture of you on a dance floor somewhere? Or you were taking it, but was that you with a camera in your hand or something?
I wasn't dancing.
Okay.
I did not dance. I shot.
Okay. What was that? It looked like it was fun, whatever was going on.
Mayor Arunan Arulampalam's inauguration.
Ah. So you're a mover and a shaker. That's why you got into that. I get it. All right.
I moved, but I didn't shake.
Poor Governor Ned Lamont. I guess, Dan, some people think that he's got a pipeline to the State Department or to the White House because he was shouted down at Southern. What happened there?
Well, he is one of the governors who has made a trip to Israel, an economic trip to Israel, commerce. And the protesters referenced that. There were 8 or 10 protesters at Southern Connecticut State University who disrupted the very start of his speech at the Greater New Haven Chamber of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And disrupt they did, so much so that he really couldn't continue. But so he basically said fairly loudly, you can see it on a videotape that one of the other news outlets has, the New Haven Independent. And you can see him saying, you've had your say, you've had your say. And he then sits down and 5 minutes later, the police restore order and possibly without arrest. I'm not aware of any arrests. The protesters were ushered out, and he continued. And well, I say continued. He essentially started his speech and gave it with no other incident. And it was the same similar speech that we've all heard and covered on urban renewal or urban revitalization, not renewal. That implies tearing things down in Connecticut with people moving into cities and housing and all that. So that's really where we are.
Yeah.
The bigger, broader picture is that, you know, this is now the third time in the last few weeks that a prominent Connecticut politician has been disrupted by these protesters.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you mentioned something interesting there, Dan. For guys like you and our age, I think we're in the same kind of neighborhood. Yeah, urban renewal. That's a, there's a phrase nobody wants to use or hear ever again, I don't think, particularly in some areas of Connecticut like New Haven and other spots.
Well, I think Hartford got hurt the worst of any major, I say major, of any of the Connecticut cities. I think you could say that Hartford arguably got hurt the worst. Sanford certainly lost a lot of its old downtown. Hartford lost the Front Street neighborhood in favor of Constitution Plaza, which has been a failure from its outset. And New Haven, arguably because of Yale, had a little bit less destruction at its core, but certainly no shortage. You know, Abe Ribicoff was a great governor and senator, but unfortunately he had a power base that brought a lot of money for urban renewal to Connecticut. And that that the legacy of that is the destruction of historic buildings that we wish we hadn't done.
Yeah, neighborhoods too. Hearings on artificial intelligence regulation in D.C. and Hartford. Dan, what happens if AI doesn't want to be regulated? What if it's just, what if it takes over and says, I will not be regulated? How do you regulate this?
Well, AI is going to be regulated. The question is, do you do positive or negative regulation? That is, in Connecticut, the hearings today, and my colleague Ken Dixon wrote about it, you know, they're talking about high-powered computer centers that can do some of this AI under state watch. Some people may not like that. There really is not a single easy answer. Again, the positive regulation is, let's take advantage of AI. Let's not be afraid of it, but let's try as hard as we can to have government oversight over the output of what happens in AI. And I would say there are more concerns over things like copyright infringements and property property claims and things like that than there are. You know, look, AI is not going to take over the nuclear arsenal and bomb Glastonbury. That's not happening.
Bomb Glastonbury.
That's really? Another place that got hurt badly by urban renewal, but not as badly as it would if AI got hold of it.
Now, you know the thing about AI, Dan Haar, that makes that really scares me, especially going into an election, are some of these deep fakes. And I see a lot of the stuff that gets sent, you know, because of how what I cover and they know the algorithm and everything. I mean, I hear stuff from Joe Biden and Donald Trump and all the other candidates that's done in AI. And sometimes, I mean, it's funny. I realize it's fake. Not a lot of people will, Dan Haar. That frightens me.
To me, the bigger danger of political deepfake campaign tactics is not that fake pictures and so forth get circulated that people believe. It's that people will not believe what is real. You know, and so if one candidate for president who may perhaps even have been president once before paraphrases Hitler in a speech prominently three times proudly and then says to his white supremacist supporters, I have done this. Some people who want to not believe that happened may say, oh, everything is fake. That didn't happen, even though, in fact, it did.
Dan Haar is with us, Hearst Connecticut Media. We are 1 year into cannabis sales, Dan Haar. About where we should be, little less, little more. What do the numbers look like?
You could argue that we're a tiny bit behind, but not dramatically behind where we would have been. The holdup is in not in the number of locations. Right now there are 28 retail locations, including 19 that are hybrid, that are medical as well as adult use, and 9 that are retail adult use only. And that number is going to perhaps double in the next year or so. The licenses are already in the pipeline. So the issue is not that we are far behind on sales. The issue is that we're a little behind on production. And as you know, you can only sell what you produce within mm-hmm. the boundaries of a state. And so that has to be carefully regulated as to who can grow and produce products. And right now, there are only 5 or 6, up from 4 in the medical, when it was only medical prior to January 10th, 2023. So it's an orderly market that's growing. We reached $17 million in December in recreational sales. Some people would like to see that have been a lot more because, as I said, the number of stores has multiplied. So the per store sales is not quite what it was at the beginning. But I wouldn't worry about the market. It's doing fine. And in any case, the purpose of this market is not to make a fortune. It's to decriminalize marijuana and have an orderly market.
Yeah, I mean, you're only going to have so many. I mean, you know, whether it's hamburgers, cheeseburgers, smoothies, coffees, or marijuana, there's only so big of a market you're going to have and so many people that don't want them. You can't force people to go into
yeah,
it.
But the more cannabis you sell, the more hamburgers you sell.
You picked up right on that.
Especially if somebody stays open until 2 in the morning.
Exactly. Dr. Jill Biden coming to Groton tomorrow. She is coming. Why?
Well, it's a symbiotic relationship that first ladies have with the submarine force, right? Ever since President Jimmy Carter, who was a member of the submarine force, as you know,
yeah.
in the back, way back in the 50s, under Admiral Rickover, first ladies especially and White Houses in general have taken submarines under their wing and sponsored them. And this first lady is the sponsor of the USS Delaware, which I'm not sure I think is in the Virginia class. It could be the LA class. I know that submarine people are going to be upset if I get it wrong, but I think it's Virginia class attack submarine. And so she's coming, as she has before in 21, to meet with the families and give the support. These are people who have the submarines are gone for 6 months at a time. It's not an easy life, and they should get her support, and they do. She gets the profile of being a supporter of a relatively popular arm of the military, and they get the support of, obviously, the spouse of the president mm-hmm. with perhaps the political backing that goes with that. We want to maintain 2 subs a year at about $4 billion.
Yeah. And so
everybody gains from this, except for those people who think we don't need the submarines. I think they're, you know, an important part of the
sure, arsenal. Sure, sure. Especially matching up against Russia. And, yeah, and some guy that just, listen, Dan, you and I both know, he's not the most vocal member of the Connecticut Congressional Delegation, but like you said, 2 subs a year or 2 subs every couple of years, Joe Courtney, you know, Congressman Submarini, he and a lot of other people, he gets it done.
Joe Courtney will have a job for life as long as we're making 2 subs a year.
Right.
And obviously, as we've reported many times, the limit to how many people can work in Connecticut on submarines is the limit to how many people they can find who are skilled and can
yeah.
You know, run those machines and have those constructions and design skills. And so it's really, I think they're up to 18,000 people. I don't quote me on the number.
Wow.
Maybe 20,000.
That's a small. That's a good sized town. Wow. Jeez.
And that, by the way, is that's in addition to the base, right? Remember, Electric Boat and the base. Speaking of symbiotic relationships, they play off each other as well, right? If you lose the base, you know, not going to lose the Electric Boat tomorrow, but
yeah.
they're linked. Where the subs are made and where the subs live, and that's another 15,000 people at the base.
Yeah, when you do the numbers. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media. Dan, always good to chat with you. Have a great week, and we shall talk next week, sir. Thank you.
Busy times are coming.
Yes, sir. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media.